You good with that, Tom?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to explain a little bit of my thinking with this motion, and particularly with the removal of the PDT's bullet, that third bullet. I think it's important to do that to maintain consistency with the sector management approach. I think the underlying contract to sector management is that any sector that can demonstrate that they can remain within their ACE and harvest groundfish should be allowed to pursue that. And I think we need to get away from over-reliance on some of the gear distinctions. If a gillnet sector or, you know, any mobile gear sector feels that they can access these areas and can demonstrate that they can do that without exceeding their ACE, they should be allowed to do that. So I think that's important from a consistency standpoint. I just wanted to also say that I think this motion, or my intent with this motion, is to ensure that any expanded access sectors receive through their ops plan demonstrates, as all other exemptions must, that they're not undermining any other stated management objectives that we have, and that they're fully accounting for their catch in these areas, as they have to fully account for their catch where they are currently allowed to fish. And finally, I'd say that I think if this alternative is to go forward in the framework and to be developed and approved, that it's the council's wish that this would these opportunities would be afforded all sectors, and that sectors would have an additional opportunity to revise existing requests or make new exemption requests based on this alternative. So that's why I think it's the way to move forward.
Thanks, Tom. Dave.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I strongly support this motion. In the first place, I'd like to particularly commend the PDT for bringing this forward, and in particular the analysis that they did. And I strongly agree with eliminating the third bullet. And I would like to also point out that we need to make certain that we protect the ability to do this action with an EA. And we may have to make adjustments as we go along to make certain that we protect that situation. We don't want to risk pushing this over by adding things to the action that would push us into the EIS requirement area. So that we have to be very cautious of that. I know everybody's aware of it, but I just want to stress that.
Dave Gayfield, then Dave Pierce.
Yeah, my comments are similar to Dave's. I'm concerned that you know, with this protected resources element of this that we tried to address in the original motion, and that's why we had specific gears listed, that I don't want to trigger the EIS provision. So any signal from the service, assuming this motion passes, that that's an issue earlier would be helpful. The second one is a question of timing. Since this is applies to sectors only, chances are sector rosters may have to be in before this is complete. So my question is, will a provision, or can a provision be made, or do we have to make a provision for people, should this be approved by the council, from the common pool to join a sector based on the fact that this clearly gives sectors a very large advantage over common pool vessels potentially?
You want to tackle that one, Sue?
Yeah, we should think about that. I mean, it does, just like all exemptions that we have in the sector rules, common pool vessels are not, aren't exempted unless they choose to join a sector, which they can. Right now, they can join a sector up through December 1st. And we could broadcast that to the few vessels that remain in the common pool fishery. And while I have the mic, I support the motion as well. As I mentioned earlier, you know, certain gears may be problematic in some of these areas from a protected resource issue, and then there's the lobster issue concern as well. But we will be looking at that, and hopefully, you know, it won't be. But I need to, again, say that for the record. But I will support the motion.
Yeah, thank you. So it's quite clear to me that you're on record that NIMS will go. We'll make this work for the sectors, and we really appreciate that. Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, a question and a comment. It's unclear to me why the maker of the motion would reference the figure provided to us by the plan development team that is a figure that is responsive to the motion of the committee at our last meeting, and now we've taken action to take that off the table. In other words, I'm searching for the logic for the that particular figure. Why not? Why wouldn't there be access in all of closed area 2, except for those areas where there are closures due to protect the habitat, you know, the white triangles in closed area 2? Maybe a simple response, but why not?
Tom.
Thanks, and perhaps I don't fully understand the question, but my intent, the first motion that we made was effectively a response to information from the service that we could not pursue the alternative as it was drafted at that time, as we discussed and voted on at our last committee meeting. As we look at this PDT text, it's taking the problematic areas off the table, those areas identified as the reason why we couldn't move forward with the previous approach. So that's my understanding. You know, as far as the areas to enclosed area 2, I would defer to Tom with regards to that.
So enclosed area 2, the white triangle and the quadrilateral, those would be closed, continue to be closed to no access in those areas.
Tom.
Well, where's Mike Ruccio here? He was here. There he is. This is a little odd. This is all elongated because of this projector. I mean, everything is stretched north-south. That's why everything looks so thin. But anyway, this is what the committee motion authorized, was this area. There's at least part of this corner up here, which is currently, at some times of the year, access is allowed through the Eastern Georges Bank Haddock SAP. So in some respects, you already have access to this piece up here through a special access program. This area here, however, is not allowed under either the SAP or under the committee's proposed motion.
Okay, so I would suggest the maker of the motion might want to consider that particular point. There is some access in that upper triangle, according to the SAP, just described by Tom, but the motion would not change the situation for the other area, the white and quadrilateral. So you might want to consider that as part of your motion. Now, my comment is, I'm struggling with this because I would like this to go through the system as quickly as possible to have relatively short debate. That is the kind of gear that can be used in the area, specifically the third bullet not being included in the motion, leaving it up to the service to determine what kind of gear should be allowed in the area. I like the language that was originally put forward by the plan development team. I think that particular language would indicate that gill netting would not be allowed, right? The way it's worded now, gill netting is not allowed. You have to have specialized gear to go in there, modify trawl gear primarily, then, of course, long lines and hang lines. So if we rely on the sector operations plans, and that would probably involve requests for access by gill netters, does that complicate matters? In other words, we're telling the regional office, you make the call on whether or not gill netting should be allowed in these areas. Do we want that? Do that? Does this committee want to do that? Or do we say we want to be consistent with what we have considered up to this particular point in time as to preferred gear, the kind of gear that should be allowed in these areas, and that would mean no gill netting? I raise that as an issue in the context of protected species concerns. I think that'll create a lot more complicate matters for the regional office. They're going to have to really dig deep down to the database and focus on gill nets and interaction with protected species. And they'll figure it out, I'm sure. But why complicate matters for them and maybe slow the system down? So my preference is to include that particular bullet in there. So I would make a motion to amend. And that amendment would be that we include the third bullet offered up by the plan development team as suggested sector closed area access measure text.
And Does your motion to amend also include the question that you had to Tom about the language in the first bullet?
Yeah, why not? So my amendment would also be to provide the opportunity for access in the upper triangle and the other area that is shown in the figure on the screen.
Which I think we could do by deleting the last sentence by the first bullet.
If that does it, then I'll go with it.
Okay. Let's give Tom a minute here to catch up. Dave, is this good with you? Is there a second to this motion? Second by Dave Gaffel. Committee comments. Tom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't. In hearing Tom's comments about these areas identified in Figure 1 and in white on the north end of closed area 2, it's not clear to me that there's any obvious justification for taking those off the table. So I'd support considering those as part of this motion. In terms of including the bullet that was excluded in the original motion, I have to say again that I just think this is inconsistent with what we're trying to do with sector management, and I think our first focus should be on catch counting and fishing mortality, and that any sector that can demonstrate, regardless of the gear that they're using, that can demonstrate they can access fish, make money, and stay in business without having some of these negative impacts and not undermining some of our management objectives, they should be allowed to do that. And the fact that we're doing this through a sector operations plan approach allows us not to do some of the unnecessary analysis. We won't have to look at any options that nobody wants. So if nobody wants to get into a given area with gill nets, they won't ask for that exemption, and the service won't have to analyze that. I actually don't think it's an undue burden for the service to analyze each and every exemption that people feel would be help for their businesses in a pretty troubling year. So I don't think that's undue workload. I think it's important to remain consistent with our goals in sector management to allow opportunities within the hard tax that we're fishing under now. So I'm going to oppose this. I do, however, support considering the areas on the north end of closed area 2.
Dave?
Yeah, I seconded this for discussion because it goes to the question I asked in the original motion. The gears that were specified here were specified because they have a likelihood of getting specific species. For example, using the rule trawl in closed area 1 and closed area 2 or a separated trawl should reduce the catch of yellowtail significantly, and that's going to be an issue. The second one, the issue of gillnets, I would hope I could hear a very clear signal today on whether or not those are going to be red flagged or not in advance. That would help determine how I vote on this motion. As an individual, I'm more concerned with the consequence closures that already exist for harbor porpoise and gillnets than I am for getting gillnetters access to areas that they're not currently allowed in, and it may have harbor porpoise consequences all their own. I feel personally that by the consequence closures in the western Gulf of Maine, that moving these gillnets out into the deep water, Davis Swell, places like that in February and March, when there are already proven high concentrations of harbor porpoise and white-sided dolphins out there, may have very much the law of unintended consequences, and we may actually increase the harbor porpoise kill rate. Opening up a number of these offshore areas to gill netting may further exacerbate that issue, which in essence drives yet another nail in the gill netter's coffin. So, protected species isn't something we deal with on a regular basis. I don't know if there's anybody here from that division today, but I would really like to hear something on the likelihood of these sector requests being granted for these areas, and that would determine to a large degree how I vote on this amendment.
Tom?
Just a quick follow-up on that, and I absolutely take Dave's point. I mean, protected species have to be considered here. I'd actually be very concerned if someone from the protected species branch were here and gave us an answer today. I mean, this requires analysis. We have to look at all the information that we have, and that's a thorough process. As Tom pointed out at sort of the top of this discussion, passing this motion, pushing this alternative will allow the service to do all that work. Ideally, the sectors will take an approach of targeted exemptions that they actually see providing substantial value to their businesses. I hope that, and I imagine that's what we're going to see. I fully get the point, and I think it's a good one, that we have to consider protected species issues. But that's a thorough process. And we have a very well-staffed protected species division that is hired and compensated to do that analysis. So let's let them do it, and they can come back with those answers.
Other committee comments on the motion to amend? Audience comments? Jim?
Jim Odlin, commercial fisherman. This particular motion, I hear what Tom Dempsey's saying, and I think I agree with him. My question is, by changing that, which some of these areas right now are open under SAPs, and you're required to use this selective gear, would this particular change, eliminating those restrictions, trigger an EIS? That's what I would worry about. More than the underlying, you know, the intent now is to avoid an EIS and be able to do this with a framework. So if we were to lift these restricted gear areas, would that restrictions on some of the selective gear that presently is required in some of those areas, would that likely trigger the EIS? And if so, then I think you should vote this amendment in to keep it in place. You're only talking about 1 year till you get your omnibus, like maybe 1 year, till you get your omnibus amendment in. So you want to try to avoid that. But other than that, I support the concept that you guys are working on here, and I think you really need it. Just for the record, I did an analysis recently, and I tried to figure out what our percentage of our haddock catch was since 2007 when that last big year class recruited in, and it averaged 18% of our tack we caught of our haddock. Then I did an analysis to check what the Canadians caught of their tack, and it was 94%. You know, I mean, 18 to 94% were sharing the stock. Then I figured out if we'd have fished at the same rate as the Canadians, what would our catch have been? Would have been an additional 483 million pounds of haddock over that period, which, by the way, have died. I mean, what would this industry look like with an additional 483 million pounds of fish coming over the docks? I mean, I'd submit it wouldn't be a disaster. You know, it'd be far from it. It would be a whole different industry. And you've got another year class that's even bigger than that one, ready to recruit. In fact, it is recruiting right now, being discarded. So I think these type of things, you should look at, okay, how do we catch this fish? And this is one of the tools that you have to allow people to catch this fish and land the yield that we should be landing. This fish is being landed by Canadians. The only other explanation is that they're better fishermen than our guys. So I can't believe that. I won't believe that. I think we need to look at that. They're staying within their TACs, but they're catching their quota. So all we got to do is look at what they're doing and kind of try to mirror what they're doing. It's not really hard. You just have to have the will to do it. So I support the concept here. I'm just worried about taking these gear restrictions off at this time. will that trigger an EIS?
Peter.
Peter Shelley, Conservation Law Foundation. I don't know, maybe that 483 million pounds produced this big year class that hopefully will save some of the haddock fisheries. So I'm not sure it was out there idling this whole time while it wasn't being caught. We're opposed to this motion and this approach, which would create an enormous, undefined, and really not time-limited loophole in the requirement to look at minimizing fishing gear impacts on essential fish habitat. We've been waiting, like many of the people at this committee, for well more than a decade for this process to end. And now the committee is looking at ways to get around that process yet again, and we're strongly opposed. We think that this approach, just based on the discussion you've had today, clearly requires a lot more analysis. It has, from our perspective, the same, I'll use a legal phrase, segmentation problems with NEPA and the Endangered Species Act that the original committee motion had. And this is, these are laws that are intended to help you reduce your environmental impact. So for us, it's not, I guess I'll use one of the committee members' words, rigmarole. It really is going to help produce a better decision that will produce a sustainable fishery. So we also see it as an enormous redirection of very limited regional office resources to a set of applications that no one knows how comprehensive or big they're going to be, as opposed to how tailored and focused they're going to be. This is, you're just creating a big opening and a great expectation that this is where salvation lies. And I can't imagine a sector manager or sector not trying to drive as much of their fishery through this loophole as they can. There are existing programs, whether experimental fishery programs, special access programs, that could be used, that are much more tailored, that are much more specific, that don't require a motion, that should be explored first. I don't see how any of these closed areas is going to help you get more redfish. That's probably a function of gear rather than open or closed areas. We would support developing the redfish market. We hope we would catch more of that. I don't think this amendment deals with that. This amendment responds to an environmental disaster that the council hasn't even defined yet. So how can you say that your investment of your scarce resources into this motion is actually going to be responsive at all to the people who are actually caught up in a disaster? And there are people like that. But is this going to help them? I don't think so. I don't know, but we haven't seen any of the analysis. You haven't even defined what the disaster is. And then finally, I guess there's a problem we have just in terms of what this looks like. Here is a group that have managers who have sort of rightfully looked at the science models and say, these models are out of whack. We don't trust them. We don't trust any of them. We have a group of managers that are saying that we have unknown environmental productivity shifts here that we can't, we just don't even know what they are, but we know they're there. And so what's our response? Oh, let's just fish more. Let's not close down and have zero possession on some fish. Let's just increase the areas where we fish. Let's not analyze how much bycatch. Let's not analyze the gear impacts. Let's push that off to nymphs. Let them handle it on a sector application by application process that will chew up their entire time from now until the start of the fishing season and probably beyond. This doesn't make any sense to us. We think it has profound legal problems, and we don't think it is particularly targeted toward the people who are indeed caught up in a disaster. Thank you.
Yep. Ben and Drew, are your comments specific to the motion to amend or to the main motion? to the motion to amend. Okay. Drew? Then Jackie? And...
Hi. Drew McKay, Associated Survival Fund. I wanted to respond to comments saying that this was somehow an end around on the habitat process, because we're obviously very concerned about the habitat process. And those comments, I'm sorry, are just absolutely untrue. What is being proposed here is to allow access into fishing mortality closures. Nothing here is being proposed to allow into existing habitat closures. Also, from the SASE model output and the two alternatives that the Habitat Committee has put forward that the Council is going to consider next week, none of these areas being discussed, and the PDT has carefully made sure of that, are being proposed for any kind of habitat measure going forward. So the areas you're talking about here are not existing habitat closures, nor are they being proposed for future habitat measures. So to say that this is somehow an end around on the habitat process is just absolutely not factually correct. It's got nothing to do with habitat. You're specifically avoiding habitat. Add to that, these measures will likely decrease swept area by putting the fishermen on the higher concentrations of fish, therefore decreasing area swept, which, as we've learned after 5 years of analysis in the Habitat Amendment, that is the factor. If you really want to protect habitat, it's all about Z, area swept. So actually what you're proposing, if you really want to look at it, is actually good for habitat. Not that this is a habitat measure, because it has nothing to do with existing or possible future habitat areas.
Okay, I don't want to go tit for tat on a motion to amend here. So specific to on the motion to amend, Jackie.
Thank you, Jackie O'Dell, Northeast Seafood Coalition. We do not support the motion to amend in its entirety. Specifically, we concur with Tom Dempsey's statement about the need to allow sectors and work through the sector management system to be able to craft creative exemptions, which then can be considered and analyzed by the agency. There's a lot of various creative exemptions that could be put forth by the sectors and the gillnet-specific fishermen that I think may get around some of the issues that people are having here today, and we shouldn't preempt that creativeness and that creative thought and those exemptions by moving, you know, forward by having that first, by prohibiting them at this point. That should be an analysis that should be done by NMFS at a later date. We do, however, support the second sentence if that would be included into the original motion. So I'll just leave that at that for now, and we'll probably get up and comment at the next opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you. Richie? Any other audience members? Okay, back to the committee. Tom, then Sue.
Thanks. I think a lot of those comments were helpful. Think specifically to the issue regarding the EIS that Jim brought up. I think that's something that we need to look at. But in my experience, both at the council and more broadly, you get nothing that you don't ask for. So if the answer, as we develop this alternative, is that is going to slow it down, it's going to trigger a longer regulatory process, then let's cross that bridge when we come to it. My preference, my strong preference at this point, is to keep that on the table and move forward. I do think it's a legitimate concern. I think the way that we're going, hopefully we can deal with this motion. I do, as several of the speakers also pointed out, once we get back on the main motion, depending on how this goes, we can address the areas in the north end, the closed area too, because I do think that those should be included.
Sue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Allowing vessels to ask for any gear in these areas, will it create work for the agency? It certainly will, but the bottom line, I think, and the thing that we need to be concerned about is if it does trigger an EIS, we wouldn't make May 1, 2013. So the regional administrator has authority to approve and disapprove. Once you punt this over to the agency, we'll be looking at it in terms of what we're going to approve and what we're not going to approve. And if the overriding objective is to ensure that this happens May 1, 2013, and it's clear the council, that's what the council wants, and it would be helpful if you state that, then we would be disapproving requests that would trigger an EIS.
Dave.
Yeah, very brief. I don't want to do anything that might trigger an EIS. I cannot support this motion, but I don't know what Tom wants to do afterwards, but I would support any modification or amendment that would provide access to all areas of CA2 outside of the COD HAPC.
Any further comments on the motion to amend? Okay, seeing none, are those committee members who support the motion to amend, please indicate so. Those opposed? Are those abstaining? The motion fails 2-7-1. We're back to the main motion. Dave?
Yeah, I don't know how Tom wants to handle this because it's his motion, but would he accept a friendly amendment to add access to all areas of CA2 outside of the COD HAPC?
Just to make sure that I think we have that line that you pointed out at the end of the first bullet, so we just want to make sure that we take that out so we don't have conflicting language in the motion. So the perfection, we could handle the perfection simply by eliminating the last sentence in the first bullet.